This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to AI Scouted on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined as always by Mr. Carl Matchett. How are you, sir?
Dismal, Dave. I've been working hard for the last week. No days off at all that you normally shout at me for disappearing and all the rest of it. And then today I'm off and I'm not feeling very well. So what's that about?
That's not ideal at all. That's all them holidays you've had this year just catching up on you, you see. You're not used to being in the UK for so long.
Nice.
That's my guess anyway. So, Todd Boehly has put out into the ether the idea of an all-star game, all-star weekend type of thing. I think it's a good idea. I think you could do a women's all-star game on a Saturday, a men's on a Sunday. You could do fun things like free kick competitions, skill competitions, passing competitions, whatever, and make a whole weekend of it. Make, you know, do meet and greets with players and fans and whatever. And I think you could put it in other countries so that it can help you continue to grow the Premier League. It's obviously been shot down very quickly by the likes of Gary Neville, who has a very big bee in his bonnet about American ownership in football, which is quite interesting considering he never had a bad word to say about American owners until his paycheck at Sky was threatened. Mr. England, Henry Winter, also coming out against it because, you know, it's not the way we do things here. But what are your thoughts on the matter?
It has merit and interest, I think. I don't expect that this will happen in the slightest. I can only envisage what conversation would go like when you go up to, let's say, Daniel Levy and say, we want to borrow a couple of your players for a weekend with no benefit to Tottenham whatsoever. I don't imagine that that would be a particularly long conversation, and I think there are plenty of other owners who would be similar, and certainly managers who would be similar. Klopp has obviously had himself a bit of a chuckle about it as well. I think that there's potential for something. It doesn't have to be the all-star idea exactly, but something different into the English game, I think, is not a bad thing in the slightest, to be honest. I mean, you made the point of the Community Shield could be either replaced or reshaped at the very least. We've spoken for years and years and years about getting rid of the League Cup, for example. So at the moment, it's not feasible. There's no room. There's not even room to play our own games at the minute, as I think teams are going to find a problem with in the coming weeks and months. But I don't imagine that this will take place too quickly. Or really, I think what Boehly was probably wanting to do was just start the conversation, bring forth ideas, maybe get people talking about his way of doing things and the different way that he might start to, let's say, seize a bit of power or initiative in the Premier League, all those kind of things that new owners try to do. He's just doing it a bit more outspokenly, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, look, Todd Boehly has thus far come across as a bit of a clown in most of his dealings at Chelsea, the way they carried on in the summer, their approach to transfers, some of the rumours that came out of Chelsea about things he was suggesting, including in reports after the sacking of Thomas Tuchel, which remains one of the more bizarre things that's happened in the Premier League in the last few years. And people people want to laugh and point at the American because there is a snobbishness in the UK towards Americans where they just don't think they understand football. And certainly there's a portion of the Americans that don't, but a lot do. And Todd Bowley, as an owner of a Premier League club, or the front of an ownership group of a Premier League club, is as entitled as anybody else to say whatever it is he wants to say. And what was lost in the shuffle was that his view on it was, let's do this All-Star game and let's give all the money to the football pyramid. You know, let's make this game meaningful to the rest of the football pyramid. I think you could replace the Community Shield because I don't think anyone cares about the Community Shield. I don't think the owners or the managers would have a leg to stand on because I think most of the players would absolutely be in favour. Romelu Lukaku, when he was at United, he spoke about this idea as well. And a number of players replied in his Twitter mention saying that they thought it was a good idea too. So, you know, why not? Like, I get the idea that there's no room in the calendar. There is if we just replace the Community Shield with a full weekend celebrating the game. And that's what it's about. Like, people say, oh, the game won't be any good because the players won't be used to playing together. If you put the 22 best players in the Premier League on one pitch, the game is going to be good. It's not going to be a bad game of football. It'll be a fun game. And the idea of players getting injured, we're not talking about blood and thunder tackles here. We're not talking about Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira going head to head in the middle of the park. We're talking about a game played as an exhibition where you'll get players trying crazy tricks and dribbles and passes and stuff and just showing the length and breadth of their talent. That's what it's about. You watch an NBA All-Star game, no one plays any defense. No one bothers with it. Until maybe the last 2-3 minutes of the game, it's a free-for-all. And the Pro Bowl is often the same in American football. The Major League Baseball All-Star Weekend is tremendous. They do these things really well. It's not just about the caliber of the game. It's about how much fun the game is and how much of a spectacle the whole weekend is. All those players coming together. It's also a great opportunity for players who have ambitions outside of football to enter the business world after their playing career is over, to make contacts and to network. And these things are important to a lot of players as well. I think we'll see more and more of that. When you see in the NBA, you see LeBron James recently became a billionaire. Kevin Durant is on his way. Michael Jordan obviously is a billionaire. Kobe Bryant was on his way. And the reason for this is that they've been able to network very successfully. And a big part of that, which all of them have spoken about, is the opportunities at the All-Star game to mingle with certain people from the world of business. And I do think in time, we will see more and more footballers go that way as well. When their playing career ends, rather than going into coaching, where most of them aren't suited to be, or punditry, where most of them are just far too mind-numbingly dull to listen to, they will head into the world of business. And this can be a springboard for them. Have all the owners there as well. All the owners have business interests. They'll all be inviting contacts as well. So it could be a great growth opportunity for many players. But we have been set by Gordon. Chaloner, I think, is the pronunciation of the surname. If not, I do apologize. He is one of our subscribers and regular listeners. He wants us to put together our All-Star teams. One for the North, one for the South. So let's start with the North, because I think this one's going to be easier, Carl, because being honest, I thought 10 of these positions picked themselves.
I imagine we overlap an awful lot on the North one. I went for one, which maybe isn't, but I've gone for, like, in terms of an all-star team, I've gone for, like, what's the players have done over the last few years, not just where they are right at this moment in time. So I imagine that, yes, there is one in particular position which in fact I'm going to say right now is the left side of the front three. I reckon that's the one where maybe we'll differ, but I've also put one in defence, which is probably not where you've gone, but just based on what they've done previously.
Yeah, so let's start off. I've got Alisson in goal. Who's your goalkeeper?
Same,
right. I've gone Trent and João Cancelo as my fullbacks. I think they're the two best fullbacks probably in the world right now.
By a distance, the easiest picks in the Premier League are those two, if you're picking, again, based on what has been the case over the last few years, what we've come to expect of them, how they define their team's performances, their importance in both halves of the pitch. It's a fairly routine double pick there, I think.
Okay. I think Van Dijk is an obvious one. I think he's by far the best centre-back in the league. So I've got him. But I put it to you that the other centre-back position is one where there are at least three, possibly four options. Now, I've got, for possibilities in this role, Ruben Dias, Joel Matip, Raphael Varane, and I would consider Ibu Konate if he was playing regularly, because I think he might be the best of the four. But with him not playing regularly, I've limited to the other three. But give me your centre-backs first.
So Van Dijk is obviously my left-sided one. And yeah, I think Konate would be in this parallel universe where a regular All-Star game is a thing. I think Konate would probably be someone spoken about for maybe two All-Star games down the line, something like that. He's probably not there in terms of what the other ones have done and achieved so far. But yes, I've gone for Varane, one of the ones that you've picked out there of that crop. I think based on, obviously, his time at Real Madrid more than anything else is one of the standouts in European football in terms of centre-backs over the last decade, more or less, really. So I don't think that there would be too much argument against him being picked. And also it stops it being a two-team team, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. It does. And like in terms of name recognition, he's obviously, alongside Virgil, they're the two most well-known centre-backs from the north. Obviously there's a couple in the south that we can talk about when we get there. But those two are the standouts. And even though I don't think he's of the calibre that he was 4 years ago, I think he has had a drop-off carrying Sergio Ramos for years. Definitely wore him down a bit. I do think he is the right choice for what you said as well about not just having it as a two-team combination. So I'm happy to go for Varane. However, I will say, you said Ibu hasn't done what they've done in the game. Not one of them has been the best centre-back in a Champions League final. Not Joel, not Diaz, not Varane. Ibu has been the best centre-back in a Champions League final. So I'll give him that bit of credit there. But I will go Varane as well. I think that is a fair pick. In midfield, I think we're probably going to overlap because I don't really think there's much cause to pick anybody outside of Kevin De Bruyne, Rodri, and Thiago.
Yeah, even Guy put the same three there in the middle. I mean, Fabinho is probably the one you can put up against Rodri. I think the other two are quite comfortably clear, to be honest.
Mm.
I wouldn't have any complaints at that.
The only other name I would throw out, but he's not of the same level as Rodri yet, but I think it might be a better all-round footballer, is Bruno Guimarães, who I think if you're doing a 22-man squad, Bruno Guimarães would be in that squad and would probably get, you know, 45 minutes in the game if you just changed everything at halftime or whatever. So I do think Bruno would be worth doing. And I'd also say as well, if you're doing an All-Star game, I do the subs the way you can do them in basketball, where players can come on and off. So you play 10 minutes, you come off, you go back on, come off, and just, you know, treat it as what it is. It's a showcase, not a competitive game. So we're aligned on the midfield. I think we'll be aligned on two of the front three. We've got Salah on the right wing and Haaland through the middle.
Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier left wing was one where you thought you might have gone in a different direction to me. Guy has picked the same player I'd have picked. in Phil Foden, but I am open to being swayed on that one.
No, I've actually got Foden as well. I thought that might be the one where we differed a little bit, because I do think there are different options there. Obviously, Diaz is one of them, and
yeah,
I suppose people like Sancho as well. If we look at his time in Dortmund, certainly he can be another option there. But by and large,
and there would certainly be people that would push for Jack Grealish, even though I don't think he's as good as Foden. He's certainly a star name, and he's certainly the type of player whose game is well suited to an all-star game type showcase. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a big fan, but I do see the merits in a Jack Grealish in an all-star type setting.
The one other name I would put, which would definitely be included if it was been done this year, but certainly for the first all-star game anyway, for that left-hand side, you'd probably say Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, if it was put to a fan vote, he would be the leading vote-getter, because his weird stands would vote en masse for him. Name recognition, you would have to include him in the squad regardless, just for name recognition, because he will automatically bring a big viewing audience, because that's just the power of his brand. I don't think from a footballing standpoint there's any real argument to put him in, unless you wanted him as the backup to Haaland, you know, as your backup number nine from the north. Maybe you go with him at this point in time. Bernardo Silva obviously would get a squad position. He wouldn't be a starter for me, but he'd be your backup to KDB. I think that'd be fair. And like you said, Fabinho would be in the group. I think Ilkay Gundogan's probably in the group as well. But it is largely a City, Liverpool-dominated north, where you get Alisson, Trent, Virgil, Thiago, and Mo. So you get five from Liverpool. You get Haaland, you get Foden, Rodri, KDB, and Cancelo from City. So five from them as well. And then Rafa Varane as your United inclusion, a token gesture to the once great club. So yeah, we're pretty. I think we've actually picked the exact same 11 for the North. So that's fine. And Guy has picked basically the same team, except he went Diaz over Varane. So he went six City players, which I think indicates that Guy is a closet Man City fan. Let's move on to the South before he has time to respond. And he's right there in the bottom. Alan Saint-Maximin would have to be included, just because it would be great fun to watch him play in that type of game. Imagine the pointless stepovers if it didn't really matter.
I think there's a few players of that ilk who would be would make it a bigger spectacle as well. I think that's fair to say. I mean, even if you think back to last season, we had Rafinha in it. He'd be another one who you'd want in the group.
Yes.
If it was that kind of environment where you can just play and just show how good you are. And even people, to be honest, then assuming he was fit for the day, Anthony Martial, someone like that, someone who's actually doesn't really do that much in the end, but skill-wise, technique-wise, speed-wise, can be quite exciting. There'd be a few of them who would get in, to be honest, and have a decent 20-minute outing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you could pick 33 players.
Yeah, you'd go for the squad, I'd say.
You know, and play it and just make it a proper showcase. And I think the more players you include, the more likely the players are to buy in, because, you know, it's a big opportunity for all of them. And an acknowledgement of their standing. Let's do the South, and I think we will have some differences here. I think, because I don't think it's as clear in the South, and there's probably a couple more clubs, because there's not really a standout team in the South the way there's a Liverpool and a City. There's kind of in the South, you've got Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs, and West Ham, maybe, and they're probably four of the five teams that come after the top two, with United being the other one. So I'll let you start. Who's your goalkeeper?
So along the same lines as what I was saying before of, you know, what they've done and their standing in the game and overall, I've actually gone for Hugo Lloris. I think World Cup winning captain is a pretty good one to have as a starting point.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. And I think his style of play is certainly suited because he's a good distributor from the back. And like you said, he is the biggest name of any of the Southern goalkeepers. I've gone Mendy because I think he's probably the best, though I'm not a big Mendy fan. I think he is quite error-prone. But I looked around, I couldn't really find a goalkeeper that I really liked. Areola was probably the closest one, but given he's not first choice at West Ham, I was kind of hesitant to put him in.
Yeah, there's a lot of... if we're being kind, we'd say potential, and if we're being truthful, we'd say average goalkeepers in this this half of the country, I think. And you mentioned beforehand there was a fan vote, apparently, which picked Aaron Ramsdale at the top. Good.
Yeah, I mean, good. Absolute nonsense. If you want your Southern team to get walloped, you pick Aaron Ramsdale. Right, what formation have you gone for your Southern team?
4-2-3-1, more or less.
There's a good point by Guy. If you were to just draw a line across the country to separate North and South, Aston Villa might fall into the South. If you did the 10 most northerly teams, you could flex it to try and get Emi Martinez as the Southern goalkeeper. But we'll just stick with what we've got. You've got Lloris, I've got Mendy. And sorry, what shape did you say you've put in?
4-2-3-1, pretty much.
4-2-3-1. Who are your fullbacks then?
A Chelsea duo at the moment, actually. Reece James is in. And you can take your pick of the other one on the other side, because I changed it about 3 times. Ended up on Cucurella before we started, and I don't care if you change it.
No, I've got the same two. I've got the same two. I think they're comfortably the two best. I really like Tomiyasu. I really like Kieran Tierney. But I do think they're the two best fullbacks. What about centre-back then? Because there's a few candidates here. I think Romero's an automatic. I will say that. And I think you'll probably have him because you're even a bigger fan than I am. So have you got Romero plus one? And who is the one?
I do, and it's Koulibaly. I think going back to what we've said about, you know, the names and what they've done and all the rest of it, and who you'd have in an extended squad, Thiago Silva would definitely be in. You know, he's played for biggest sides and Captain Brazil and all the rest of it, but the star quality and performances over the last few years, I don't think you would ignore Koulibaly at all.
No, I wouldn't really be given all that much consideration to Thiago Silva just based on performance. When your team has to sacrifice in other areas just to hide you, I don't think you can really warrant this, because we're not hiding anybody in this game. You're going to get left defending massive open spaces, and it would end up being quite embarrassing watching him trying to deal with Haaland one-on-one. I would say Koulibaly is the second one. So we've got the same defence then. We've got James, Romero, Koulibaly and Cucurella. In midfield, then, you've gone for a double pivot. Who are your double pivot?
I have N'Golo Kante. Pretty much a widely popular choice with everybody, you know, up until when you play Chelsea anyway. Again, member of World Cup winning team and all the rest of it, and a big title winner more than once in the Premier League. And I've actually gone with Rodrigo Bentancur alongside him for a bit more of a defensive presence, because I think he's one of the better defensive mids in the Premier League. I'm not sure he quite fits into the names profile, but whatever.
So just give me the first one again.
Kante.
Kante, of course. So you've got Kante and Bentancur. So I went a little bit different here. I've gone 4-3-3. I should point that out. And I've got three in midfield because I wanted a midfield that I liked. So I've gone Kovacic because I do think he's the best midfielder at any of the Southern clubs. I think he's sensational. We've talked about him for years, and I'm going to write a letter to him now telling him that you didn't pick him, and you'll be officially out as the president of the fan club, and I'll be in. I picked Declan Rice because I wanted a bit of West Ham recognition and a bit of West Ham representation in the team. And I think he does warrant a spot because he's obviously very, very good. And this is my doff of the cap to a smaller club. And it is, in a way, based largely on form, but also just a player that I've liked for a long time. I've gone Alexis McAllister as my third midfielder because I just love watching the fella play. And it was actually kind of came down to, do I want Alexis or do I want Odegaard kind of to have a bit more of a passer in midfield? And I just think Alexis as an all-round player, I think he's got more to his game. Like I could see Man City in the summer going to get Alexis to be their Ilkay Gundogan successor. And I think he'd step up into that role and do very well. So I've got Alexis, I've got Kovacic, Rice and Alexis as my midfield. And I'm quite happy with it, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I think actually hearing that Rice would probably be in above Bentancur, to be honest, for many reasons. He's probably not a huge gap between them in terms of defensive midfield ability anyway. And if it's the English All-Star game, Rice is going to be in, isn't he? Let's face it. So that's probably a better pick. I'll swap mine in now.
Right. So that leaves us with an attack. You've got four attackers, a three and a one. I've got three. I'm assuming Harry Kane is your number nine. He is my number nine.
I've cheated and put him as my 10.
Oh! Quite the curveball.
Yeah. That's the only reason Kovacic isn't in. So there you go.
So you've got Kane as your 10. I'm completely baffled as to who your nine's going to be.
It's the title winner and favourite of the month, Gabriel Jesus.
Okay. I can see it. I think he's obviously a very enjoyable player to watch. I wouldn't include him on the basis that I'm always worried he's going to burst out crying because he has that perma cry face, and that would just spoil the whole mood of the weekend.
Yeah, he's a bit like Robin Pires in that way, isn't he?
Yeah.
Always had a face which is on the verge of being in tears.
Yeah, absolutely. Like whenever Robert Pires was actually injured, you didn't know he was actually injured because he just looked equally as sad as he had 5 minutes previously. Right, so wingers then. I've gone Raheem Sterling and I've gone Heung-Min Son.
And I've gone Son and Bukayo Saka.
Yeah, Saka. I'm tempted to put Saka at left back in mine because I do want him in the team. I love watching Bukayo Saka play. And as you've pointed out before, like if we could get our hands on him, his versatility alone would be incredible to add to the squad. I'm actually going to I'm going to drop Kukurea out and I'm going to put Bukayo Saka at right back. So I'll go Reece James right back and Saka left back. And but I want Sterling and Son. I do want Sterling and Son. I think Raheem has had two down years, but they were still good. But I think before that you could make a real argument for like 3-4 years he was one of the best players in the league. He was Footballer of the Year. One of the years, though he didn't deserve it. It was the year Virgil won the other one and Virgil should have had a clean sweep. But I thought Raheem for probably 2 to 3 years was a top five player in the league. And I think he warrants being in there. And also, like, he is a big name. Though I will point out to the organization that once employed both of us, Bleacher Report, stop lying that Raheem Sterling is the first English player to score for three English clubs in the Champions League. He did not score for Liverpool in the Champions League. He just didn't. It never happened. You've imagined it. He scored for City, and now he scored for Chelsea. So let's recap those teams. I've got Mendy, James, Romero, Koulibaly, Saka, Kovacic, Rice, and Alexis McAllister, and then Sterling, Kane, and Son. That is my southern team, and yours is...
The recent goal, James, Romero, Koulibaly, Kukurea. Rice and Kante, double pivot. Saka, Kane and Son. And Jesus up front.
I think we can be very, very happy with that.
Long game.
I think we can be happy. Right, so the next question then is, who are the managers? Because one of the things you do in an All-Star game is you pick two coaches. Normally they're picked by who has the best record in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. But obviously, we're not going to do that.
I have the answer.
Right.
What we're going to do here is not only add to the spectacle of the event, but we're also going to solve the energy crisis engulfing most of the UK population. And we're going to put Pep as the manager of the North and Mikel Arteta as the manager of the South. And it's going to be like looking into a slightly distorted mirror if you sit right in the middle of them. But we're also going to hook both of them up to an electrical grid, which converts their movements and gesticulations and furious pointing with slightly bent knees.
And tantrums.
Yes, exactly that. Into electrical current, which goes straight into the grid and straight out to everybody's houses for free.
I like that. I did think there was a way to do that if we made Conte the southern manager and Klopp the northern manager, because there's lots and lots of energy with those two. Or maybe Klopp, given what he said, wouldn't be keen on being the manager. So maybe we just sub in Thomas Tuchel and just say, look, it doesn't matter if you're not working. You come here. The South has betrayed you, Thomas. You're more of a northern man anyway. So you come and you take this team, and we get Tuchel versus Conte part two. Let's be real, though. You're not having Mikel Arteta, surely, as your actual manager of the southern team.
No, it'd be Conte, wouldn't it, if we go by names and stars.
That's okay. And ability as a manager. there'd be good options. I would be kind of fun to see, say, Pep as the manager with Klopp as his assistant, or vice versa. Have them team up together, take the bromance to the next level. I'm not sure we'd get much of the same type of harmony in the South, though.
Graham Potter might be a subservient enough sort of number two for someone.
That's not a bad shout. Graham Potter to Conte, I think, would work. I don't think Graham Potter to Arteta would work, because Graham Potter's a better manager than Arteta.
Would also probably be Graham Potter's biggest match at the moment in his career. So there's that.
Yes. Oh, well, he's on the way to being sacked at Chelsea, so...
Guy has made the point that the managers should be legends of the game of yesteryear, and has suggested Sam Allardyce for the North and Harry Redknapp for the South. My feeling is that these two would be more likely to be picked for, like, the community bosses, so they're out in the street talking to people and answering for the cameras all the questions about what's going to happen in the game. That's their role these days, I'm afraid.
Exactly. Sam is doing a meet and greet at his local pub where he's having a Sunday roast on a Tuesday. And Harry is, I don't know, hanging around outside a car dealership looking for a window that he can hang out of. The Legends thing, though, I do actually like that. So would we just say Ferguson and Wenger?
Oh, yeah. If you bring them back, that's exactly who it would be.
And, I mean, Fergie's not doing anything. He's just sitting up in the... in the stands at Old Trafford, looking particularly miserable. And obviously Wenger, I think, would do it at the drop of a hat, because the guy's just obsessed with the game. So, yeah. And let them pick their own coach and staff from their ex-players. So Ferguson can have, say, Keane and Neville, and Wenger could have Henri and Vieira, maybe. And they'd all be happy. But I think it would be good. Like, you could do things that honour the legends of the past. You could have players where, when they come out to line up or whatever, before they reveal their North versus South jerseys, they could come out in, old jerseys from their club's past. So any Arsenal player could come out in, the 03-04 kit, a Liverpool player could come out in whatever the 05 kit that we had in Istanbul, United players could wear the 99 kit. Obviously, then they'd just change out into their North versus South. But I think that could be a lot of fun. I do. I think that could be a lot of fun. Right. You have done, we've gone through that quite quickly. So you have done All-Star teams based on form.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us those and we can have a chat about those then.
Okay, so I mean, it's mid-September. We've not got too much game time to go on here. So on the one hand, that means we'll have some weird picks. And on the other hand, I think that that's probably a good thing because then we have not just got Liverpool and Man City players in our team. Because let's face it, one of those two teams has not been very good this season. So they're not going to have too many players in the North inside this at this point, are they? So we'll start with the North again. My goalkeeper is still Alisson, which I think speaks volumes as to how busy we've kept him.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably the most overworked man in the North right now. While everybody else is in their period of mourning, of course, he is probably the hardest working man going.
Maybe just the people who are monitoring the queue, capital T, capital Q, they might be as busy.
That's fair. That is fair.
Defence, I've gone for Diego Dalot on the right. I don't think there are actually too many standouts in that position at the minute. In the North, at least. Centre-backs, I've gone for the lesser-spotted combination of John Stones and Fabian Schär. And left-back is still João Cancelo.
Oh, that's interesting. I would agree on Dalot and Cancelo. Although I think Kieran Trippier is maybe worth a mention, because he has been quite good.
Yeah, Trippier.
I would have to rule John Stones out from my team. You're more than welcome to have him in yours. When you see a defender look as completely turned inside out as he did against Newcastle, I have a hard time with that. But
he was particularly twisted on that occasion. I don't think Diaz has been any good this year. I mean, he's been okay in a couple of games, but he's been actively bad in a couple of them as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he has looked... Diaz is a funny one, because obviously he came into the league in the first season, was bizarrely picked as Footballer of the Year, and you had people making Van Dijk comparisons. But at the same time, I thought he looked not average, but like not great last season. I thought he had a lot of shaky moments. I thought teams figured out that he has some weaknesses on the turn. And this season, I do think he's been flat out poor in multiple games. I would point to that Newcastle game. And I would also point to the Crystal Palace game, in which both him and Stones in the first half were awful. But yeah, I mean, I can see the point. Wolverhampton... How have you done this in terms of North versus South? What have you done with the Midlands?
So Midlands are all... I've literally done 10 and 10. So Midlands are all North. Basically, it's London and South Coast against Midlands and the North.
Okay. I would then put forward the case for one of the Wolves centre-backs.
Which is going to be Collins. We know that.
Yeah, it's going to be Nathan Collins. He's the finest young man the country has seen. A tremendous fella. No, to be fair though, Max Kilman, I think he's really good. And I don't understand how Tyrone Mings has been getting called up to the England squad for the last 18 months, while Max Kilman has been considerably better. If you want a left-footed centre-back, Max Kilman is clearly the one to go for if you're the England manager. But yeah, I'm going to go Collins. And I will accept Fabian Schär in large part because that fella can score himself a worldie just whenever he feels like it. Right, what have you got in midfield for me then?
Right, I have got a real, real charity feel game to my midfield. I've basically got one attacker and two, this season at least, workhorses. In a previous year, this might be number 10 and number 9 and Kevin De Bruyne as a midfielder, but they're a bit different this year. So De Bruyne's in there, obviously. I've got Everton's own Alex Iwobi, and I've got Joe Linton, another Newcastle face.
Joelinton's arc, the career arc from moving from one of the biggest flops in Premier League history to Jesus, he's a really good midfielder. it's so bizarre. But he's a really good midfielder.
Yeah.
Like, you would take him at Liverpool as a right-sided eight. He's been excellent since Eddie Howe made the move. And I'm absolutely on board with getting him in. And I have to say, Alex Iwobi has been really impressive for Everton since Lampard dropped him back into almost that holding midfield role. And I don't know how long it can last. Like, I don't know if this is a move that's going to work in 6 months. But, geez, it has worked really well. And I also think Tom Davies has done really well this season for them. I think he's been very impressive. I would probably push for Guimaraes over Iwobi, but I don't have any complaints with Iwobi. I do think he's been really good.
The only reason I haven't picked Guimaraes is because of injury. He's only played, like, well, 3 games, really, I think. So
yeah, and to be fair, if you're picking players who've barely played, you probably just pick Thiago because Liverpool just looked like a much better team with him, though he's only played
once in the league, what,
45 minutes or 50 minutes in the league?
Yeah, so I've not...
God, the difference.
...on the people who haven't been doing the footballs, so... Yeah, that's fair. My absolute nonsense 3 pick there.
What have you got up front?
Up front, I mean, it's not going to be a surprise who's at centre-forward, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
Erling does indeed remain in the team with his... average scoring rate of 1 every 82 seconds or whatever it is now. On the right-hand side, I've got myself a lovely left-footer who started the season really well and is now injured, but he's played enough for this. It's Rodrigo from Leeds. He had a really, really good start for them as a 9 and just off the 9 as well.
Mm.
Not really sure how long he's out for, but doesn't sound like it's going to be a quick one anyway. And on the left-hand side, I've gone for Luis Diaz. I think he's one of the few of ours who can point to having had a pretty decent start. I don't think Foden's been in top form yet. I don't think any of United's wide forwards have been in very good form yet. I think Rashford's been their best attacker, but he's been sporadic. I think he's been improved from him, but not enough to be anywhere near the top level of this. And in general, the 10 northern sides, as I said, Midlands and above, have not been sensational yet. There's been some good bits, but they've not been sensational.
No, I mean, when you look at the bottom half of the league, you've got Newcastle, Wolves, Everton, Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest and Leicester all in the bottom half. So 6 teams compared to only 4 from the south. I don't know that I can actually make an argument against that 3. Haaland, there's no argument against. I think Diaz is absolutely wanting of a position. And you're right. I mean, none of the United attackers, because they're playing Ollie ball, none of them have really been able to stand out. Fernandez has looked much better since Cristiano got dropped, but he's a midfielder rather than an attacker. No one else at Liverpool warrants inclusion. St. Maximin's had, I would say, 2 good games and a couple of ropey ones, and he's injured. None of the Wolves attackers would stand out. I mean, Neto's been hit and miss. Everton don't play with attackers. Aston Villa, it's quite tough to watch. And there's nobody at Forest or at Leicester that's warranting a spot. So, yeah, I mean, Rodrigo, his teammate Aronson has probably been another who's done really well. But he is obviously playing more as a 10 than sort of an attacker. So, yeah, I mean, happy enough to go with that front 3. This is going to be more interesting for me, though. What is your Southern 11?
Yes, this was a much more difficult one to do. I have actually kept Hugo Lloris in goal from my all-star ones rather than form. So he is still in nets. I don't think that there's been loads who have been particularly consistent. Robert Sanchez is obviously there in terms of position and goals conceded, but again, I think there have been a few flappy moments from him in particular.
Well, the howler at Old Trafford was particularly bad.
He's being extremely well protected by a very, very good defence up till now as well. So we'll see how that goes, because obviously Brighton are now a really interesting team to watch. I did have a quick look at their fixtures earlier on, and I can't help but feel that Graham Potter might have got out at an absolutely optimal time. And they're obviously two matches postponed for them now, and then they face Liverpool, Spurs, Brentford and Forest, which is fine, and then Man City, and then Chelsea, and then Wolves, and then Arsenal. That is a really, really tough run. So fair play, Mr. Potter. Timing might well be exceptional there.
Can I ask you on Brighton? Have you watched much of Lens in the last 2 years in France?
Not oodles, no.
Because Frank Heiss, the manager, he is apparently now the bookie's favourite to get the Brighton job. And I've seen a bunch of people getting quite excited about this idea that this guy who plays a 3-4-1-2 or a 3-4-3 comes in. He's someone that I have seen people tout before as a potential successor to Gasperini at Atalanta if he ever decides to move on. So he's apparently one of the people strongly being considered. De Zerbi is another, and the fella from Bodo Glimt, Kjetil Knutsen. Those are apparently their top three picks. And I'm curious about this guy. Now, I watched a bit of Lens, not the season gone, the season before, for Loic Badé. I watched a bit last year, obviously, for Doucouré. He'd be an interesting name, because I don't think a lot of people know him. He's 51. He's only been a manager of a first team, really, at a high level for the last 2 years. Before that, he was the B team manager at Lens for 3 years. Before that, he was an assistant at Laurent, and then he was with their B team. And the last time he was a manager of a team was Union Sportif Tianjin, who, to my knowledge, play in like the third or fourth division in France. At the moment, they're in the fifth division in France. I think they were a little bit higher when he was there. He's just the name going round at the minute. So curious, I was just curious if you knew much about him. But anyway, sorry, I've disrupted your line of thought. And I do agree, Brighton have a tough, tough run of games coming up. So maybe Graham Potter did bounce at the right time. And I'm sure the big bag of money he landed on in Spurs, at Chelsea rather, helped with that decision.
Unquestionably, and I absolutely think it's the right call for him to have made, by the way. Fixtures irrespective, I do think that that's a good time and a good place for him to go.
Do you think that's the right move for him,
though? Well, no, I mean, we've briefly spoken about this, I think maybe just myself and Guy on the last podcast. It very, very much depends on what Chelsea do in terms of they've got to give him an opportunity to adapt to being a big club manager. That's one thing that's not, you know, not really spoken about. But think back to Brendan Rodgers, like when we brought him in, and there was all the idea and everything was, you know, fine, and we were working towards it and all that. But it took him a bit of time, and this happens with loads and loads of other managers who take their first big one, where you have to change and adapt your in-game substitutions, for example, when and who and what kind of impact they're going to make, to being at a club which are not just okay with winning once every three games or twice every four games. Every single match is an opportunity to take 3 points, and that's really, really big mental adjustment as much as anything else. You can work to, you know, to your longer term plan and all the rest of it, but at the same time, you have to be aware that people are now expecting you to make decisions to win every single week.
Mm.
And that will take him a bit of time, and they've got to let him take that time, because you can't just expect that he's suddenly going to be on board with everything that needs to be done when he hasn't had that experience yet himself. So,
if well, that's the thing. Time... Like, he finished 10th with Brighton last year, and that was obviously a great achievement for the club. He finished 9th. But it is worth remembering that they did go 3 months without a win at one point. And they also lost 6 in a row at another point in the season and went 7 without a victory. And if either of those things happen at Chelsea, he will be fired. So you're right, he is going to have to adapt his mentality to that every game is must win. But Like when Rodgers came to Liverpool, he had this philosophy and this idea of how he was going to play. It didn't really work, and he had to abandon it completely. And the team that we became good with under Rodgers, with Suarez, Sturridge, Sterling and Coutinho all in cahoots together, was completely against Brendan Rodgers' ideas of how the game should be played. That there was no real control with how we played. It was just like a blitzkrieg. And that's not what he came promising and touting. And I don't know if Potter would just throw the baby out with the bathwater and just go with something completely different if his preferred way of playing doesn't work.
I agree. I don't think that that would be the case, but I also think that there's more substance to what he tries to set up than there was at the time with Rodgers. You know, we do have to remember that at that time, Rodgers was not hugely experienced himself. You know, he had this idea of playing and it worked a couple of times and it hadn't worked a couple of times, and he was probably still forming what he wanted it to be in terms of very, very idealistic. I think Potter's probably a bit more pragmatic at times as well. So, you know, there's not exact parallels to be drawn, obviously, but I think that there is probably a bit deeper, more sustainable way of playing now with what Potter's trying to do than actually what it turned out to be with Rodgers at the time.
Yeah, I mean, look, for him, I hope it goes well. For Chelsea, I obviously hope it doesn't go well. I don't think it will damage his reputation too much if he does get fired there, unless it goes spectacularly badly, because everybody gets sacked at Chelsea. It's just the culture of the club. But it does just, like, between the fifth game of the season on September 19th when they beat Leicester 2-1 and the 32nd game of the season on the 9th of April when they beat Arsenal 2-1, Leicester only won three games in the time in between that. They beat Brentford at home, they beat an awful Everton, and they beat a team that would be relegated in Watford. They're their only three wins. And at that point, remember, Brentford were falling apart. So, like, that is a horror show of a run. That at Brighton was acceptable because they, you know, they got a draw against Palace, against Arsenal, against Norwich, against Liverpool, against Newcastle, against Leeds, West Ham, Southampton, Chelsea, Palace, Chelsea again, and Leicester, and then Norwich again. They got those draws, and those draws meant that they were going to stay in the division. And that was fine. But, like, at any club with ambition of Europe or above, that is sackable. To win three games in 27, you would get sacked. Simple as that. Or 26, it might be. I think it's 26 games. You would get sacked. And he's going to need to become a bit more ruthless and a bit more of a, probably a bit more of a bastard as well, because he's going to have to take a harder line with players. He's not going to be able to allow players to play their way through bad form at Chelsea. He'll have to replace them. Anyway, on with your defence then. Let's hear what you've got in defence.
Right, well, good news for a man we've just been speaking about, Potter. I've got one of his players at right back, Reece James again. Not exceptional, actually, this season. But again, I think right back has been a bit hit and miss across the league. So I've gone with him anyway. I've gone with Zinchenko at left back. Obviously made quite a big difference to how Arsenal played and stuff in the build-up. At centre-back, I've got one you'll love and one you'll hate. Which one would you like first?
Give me the one I love.
A Kotchap.
Yeah, he has been absolutely outstanding.
Mental player. Absolutely superb start. I really like Southampton's partnership at the back, but it is chaotic. Like, they rely a huge amount on one versus one ability and recovery pace and the rest of it. And obviously the organisation and partnership itself is not there yet because it's brand new and they're really young. And I guess that's a big part of what Galatasaray has been brought in for as well, which I think is a really smart sign for them. I
assume that'll be a back three. Do you reckon Bella Kotchap, him, and then Salisu on the left of it?
I mean, maybe, but then you sort of take away one of the forwards because he's still going to keep the double pivot in midfield then. So I wonder whether he's just going to be a third one to come in and out for either one whenever they need a bit more old head, aggression, aerial ability, that kind of thing, all the stuff that Carr's pretty good at, to be fair. I think he's a really good signing for them.
He is a really good signing. It's a shame he was their backup target. Maxence Lacroix was the top target. If they'd gotten him, if they'd had Bella Kotchap, Lacroix, and Salisu, I might have moved to Southampton and bought a season ticket just to watch those three play together. Give me the one I'm going to hate.
I'm very sorry in advance, but middle of a back three, in doing all the repellings, I think I've only seen him have one fairly poor game so far this season, Eric Dier.
Oh, Carol.
Mm.
Guy, can you draft a letter there to Eddie and tell him I resign and won't be appearing on these podcasts anymore? Oh, yeah, no, to be fair, he has actually played fairly well. The Conte system does suit him quite well.
To the ground.
I think if you're aiming to win the title, which Conte will be, maybe not this year, but next year, I think you'd have to upgrade on him. But, I mean, you can get top four with Eric Dier. We've seen that a few times. And he is playing well. But Jesus wept. That is a damning indictment on the calibre of centre-backs currently located in southern England. I think the only one I would disagree with, I think I would go Walker Peters over Reece James. Because I think Walker Peters has been really, really good for Southampton. But I don't know that we can put two Southampton defenders in.
It would be chaotic.
Considering they've conceded 10 goals.
Two as well.
You would. So yeah, I think you're fair enough at Reece James. Others worth a mention, I think Lewis Dunk has been very good for Brighton. I would say Tosin has been quite good. Tim Ream has started the season well. Don't know how long that can continue. Nobody at Bournemouth is warranting a mention. Guehi's had a very inconsistent start. And Joachim Anderson has been good, but he's ruled out for picking on Darwin, so he doesn't get in. So, we can live with your defence. Give me your midfield then.
Right. So, since I haven't got Walker Peters, your need for more Southampton is going to be well taken care of here. We have a current and a former Saint. So, Romeo Lavia, how much have you loved him?
What a player.
Goodness me.
What a player. How Belgium are currently looking at a situation where the likes of De Bruyne and Hazard are going to age out of the team, but they're going to transition into a more physical, more powerful team with him and Amadou Onana as their midfield pairing, and they're going to absolutely monster everybody. It's not going to be fair. Like it's going to be like putting Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira next to each other in midfield.
Is it important for them that they stick with Roberto Martinez, move on from Roberto Martinez, or what? Because I don't mind Martinez. I think people make a big deal out of him being great, and that's wrong, and being rubbish, and that's equally wrong. But he is always a manager who favours movement and technique over... You know, great athleticism through the middle of his side.
Yeah, I mean, he's an okay manager. Like, he has things that he's good at and things that he's not good at. And I think, like you said, aesthetics are probably more important to him than functionality. I can see this World Cup being the end of his cycle with the Belgian team. Because he's been there quite a while now, hasn't he? What's he there? Is he 6 years in that job? 4 years in that job? He's been there a while. He's 6 years in the job. That's a long time to spend with one international team. And I do wonder if he'll look to maybe take a job, possibly back in Spain, a club job, and, you know, keep an eye on when the international job comes up there. Because I do think he likes managing it at international level, but I do think players will get bored of him as well. And like I said, with that Belgian team, it is getting to the point where a lot of the top players are starting to age out. I mean, you look at the defence, Toby Alderweireld is 33, Jan Vertonghen is 35, and they're still crucial players for them. In midfield, Witsel is still crucial. He's 33. Hazard is 31. De Bruyne is also 31. Like, you've still got the likes of Meunier knocking about. He's 31 as well. Boyata is a key squad member. He's 31. And then up front, like, Dries Mertens is 35. Lukaku's 29. Benteke's 31. The squad is aging out, and I don't know that he's going to want to... I don't know that he's going to want to be the one that sort of oversees the transition to the Ketteliers, the Lavias, the Onanas, the Woot face new Leicester defender. I don't know that he'll want to do that, because they're probably going to have a dip for a couple of years as those players all kind of develop and age up. And I don't know that he'd want to have the responsibility or the knock on his record of a couple of bad years.
Yeah, definitely an intriguing one. And among those names, Axel Witsel, been playing centre-back in the back three for Atletico Madrid this year.
Like it at all.
The World Cup as well.
I don't like it at all.
Right, alongside Lavia, former Southampton, current Tottenham, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg.
He has been good. I do think Spurs would benefit from playing Bissouma with Bentancur, though. I do think that pairing would bring better balance. But individually, Højbjerg has been their best midfielder. So it's a bit of a quandary for Conte as to what he does, because the midfield has looked a bit stale in a couple of games. Are you playing a midfield too? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the only reason McAllister's not in.
Okay, I would have played a three, and I would have gone with the two Brighton boys. I would have gone with McAllister and Caicedo either side of Lavia, because I just those two have been absolutely phenomenal this season. Like, they went to Old Trafford and just dominated United. Now, I know United were a bit of a mess, but it's good going for them to go away from home and dominate a team like that. They dominated Newcastle. They dominated West Ham at the London Stadium. Declan Rice didn't get a kick of the ball. They dominated Leeds. They didn't play well against Fulham. And then they absolutely rinsed Leicester. Like, just rinsed them. Just took Tielemans and Madison and put them in their pockets and strutted around the pitch because they owned it. It was phenomenal. So I'd go 4-3-3 with those two. But I'm curious to hear what you've got in attack.
Yeah, I went 4-3-1. The only reason, because I started with my forward for this team and I actually had three of them and I couldn't obviously pick them all. So I wanted to try and pick two, and that's how I ended up in this system. So I've got Jesus pushed out to the right wing because I think he's, you know, obviously got to be, and he's had a really good impact on Arsenal. Got himself a few goals. Really good link-up play as well, and is just generally enjoying being a regular starter. So fair play to him for that. Sadly, I am pushing him back out into his old Man City role all the same, but just so he can get in the team. Number 10, I've got Martin Odegaard, who I think has been one of the best players in the Premier League this season so far. Again, short game time in terms of we're only six matches in, but he has been just non-stop. His passing and his vision and his touch and his orchestrating play around him has been really, really good. Again, I am going to point out that Arsenal have had one of the easiest runs of games I've ever seen in my life to go to the top of the table early on, and we'll see what happens afterwards, but we are judging on what they've done so far. And the other one in the front three, or the attacking midfield three, is Pascal Gross. So Brighton do get one name in there.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I would have left Gross out, to be honest, and I'd go with the other two. But Gross has been really good, and he's gotten big goals as well for Brighton. I agree with you on Odegaard. I think he has been really, really good. I thought when they went behind at Fulham, he was the one who stepped up and single-handedly dragged them back into that game. Gabriel Jesus has been good, without doubt. I think he's definitely benefited from the easy schedule. he's a funny player. When he was at City, he did a litany of interviews talking about how he wasn't a number nine. He was a wide forward and he wanted to play as a wide forward. And then as soon as he went to Arsenal, he said, no, I've always been a striker. I've always wanted to be a striker. So I don't think he knows what he is or what he wants to be. Who's your striker then?
So this was, I think, the hardest one to pick out of probably all the positions on both teams.
You picked Danny Welbeck, I'm hanging on.
It's not Welbeck. I initially started at the top of the league, obviously, as you do, and worked my way down, and it was Kane, and then it changed like four times because he's been nowhere near actually the best one. I ended up with Ivan Toney just ahead of Mitrovic in the end.
Yes, I would say those are the two standouts, Toney and Mitrovic. And while Mitrovic has, I think, more goals, Toney's all-round play has been absolutely incredible this season. Like, I said it in the summer, last season, he should have had double figures in assists with the chances he literally put on a plate for his teammates and they managed to botch them. This season, they're starting to put them away a bit more often, but he is causing havoc for every defence he goes up against.
Yeah, he's been unstoppable. Really, really good channel work, carrying the ball, link-up play, first touch. Everything just looks really, really clicking for him. And like you say, it does help that they're... I think Wisser in particular has been doing things which are not in the 88th and 89th minute, which was mainly his role last season, wasn't it? If he started, he was a bit ineffective. If he came on, he was a real live wire. So a bit of a change in shape is probably helping as well. Sometimes I think they've been a bit more direct, similar to how they played against Liverpool last season when they just first came up, which has not always been the case from them throughout their last year or so in the Premier League. In general, very, very impressive start. And yeah, I think Toney, like you say, just above Mitrovic based on all-round impact.
Yeah, and like credit to Mitrovic. He has proven a lot of people wrong this season. He's been really, really good. And they both have been, I think, significantly better than Kane. I know Kane's got a couple of goals, but like he scored against Wolves. He was awful. He spent the entire game in Nathan Collins' pocket and didn't get a sniff. He got a chance for half a second and he scored. So like that's what you ask of your striker, but yeah, he wouldn't be in my team. A couple of others I think would warrant to mention. I think Wilf Zaha has been really, really good for Palace. I think he's playing with kind of a renewed vigour again this year. I think Andreas Pereira for Fulham has been pretty good too. Left back has been a funny position. You went with Zinchenko and he has played well, but I think defensively he is quite the liability in that Arsenal team because he's been asked to cover a lot of ground. I think Rico Henry would warrant at least a mention. Leandro Trossard has been playing as a left wing back, which was quite the interesting tactical wrinkle from Potter at Brighton. But I think my second favourite positional change that I didn't expect and has worked after the Joelinton one last year. Moussa Dineppo, left wing back and now left back for Southampton. What are your thoughts on this? Because I know you like him as a player.
Yeah, and he's just signed a new contract with them as well, so clearly he doesn't mind it too much. I thought he played really well when he was at left back, actually, as an out-and-out left back before. He was brilliant. Defensively, really tenacious. Obviously, positionally, there's going to be stuff to work on, but in terms of direct defensive work, he did really, really well. Very diligent about it.
Impossible to beat 1v1. Yeah. Like.
So that's obviously one to watch and see how that develops, and it might just be a case of it was filling in because obviously they've had a few injury absences and the rest of it, but to be fair, Southampton in general are coping better than I thought they might. I thought they might well struggle with a really young side.
Same, but they're really fun and like they're playing with a bit of freedom, a lot of tenacity. When we get into the dog days of the season and it's the slog of December, January, February, that's where it might hurt them that they are a very young team. But I mean, for now, they're more than holding their own. They've been a little bit unlucky not to have more points because they've played some really good football and they have properly put it up to teams. Now, Spurs beat them 4-1, but they did go one up there. They fought back from 2-0 down to get a draw against Leeds. They came back from 1-0 down to beat Leicester, which was really impressive. I think they outplayed United and were very unlucky to lose that game. The Chelsea game, they more than deserved to win. They were really good and again came from behind. So all seven of their points, they've come from behind, which I think is very, very impressive for a young team. And the Wolves game, I think a draw probably would have been the fair result in that one. So, like, they probably should have, I would say, two more points at least from the United and Wolves defeats, which would give them 9 for the season, which would actually jump them a couple of spots up in the table. It would jump them to take away the goals conceded, -1. They'd be 9th. They're 12th. They'd be 9th, which it's not a huge difference, but, you know, from a mentality point of view, to be top half is a lot better to be bottom than to be bottom half. I do quite like your team. I do. And I think you're right on most of the shouts, to be fair. As I said, the midfield is the one area I'd probably differ. I'd probably leave Pascal Gross out. Play Odegaard from the right and Jesus from the left with Tony through the middle. And I'd put in the two Brighton boys in midfield. But, it's not something that I'd argue about because we're only 6 games into the season and obviously there's just different players popping up at different clubs and doing really, really well. This might be an interesting thing for us to revisit later in the year, kind of do a form 11 on the season so far. So that might be something we can keep in our pocket for later in the year. But I think we've done a good job here. We were obviously very much aligned on most of our all-star picks. Is there anything you want to touch on or plug before we finish up?
No, we'll send this over to Todd and see if we can get ourselves a commission.
That's a good idea. He's willing to pay. My sources tell me there's bags of money just falling all over the place at Chelsea. You live in London. Just drop round and follow him for half an hour or so. And I would say you'd probably end up picking up a million or two that'll just fall out of his arse. Right, we'll leave it there then. And we'll be back maybe early next week, maybe for 2 next week to fill the international break. Obviously no Liverpool games now for quite the while, which is both nice and not nice at the same time. But thanks for listening and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.